Welcome back, everyone, to another day here at the Damage Report. But not just any day, a special day, because it's one of those rare days where we get to be joined as we go through the news by Dr. Rashad Ritchie. Rashad, how's it going?
It's going well, man. Good to be here. Good to once again go over the daily crazies.
Daily crazy. Well, we've got some daily crazies for you. Crazy every daily, actually. With them, we're gonna launch into that. We're gonna give people an idea of what's going on. How have you been though? It's tumultuous times. How are you holding up?
You know, let me say this on a personal note. Thank you for the invite. I always enjoy being here. Today was a difficult day for me, actually. Yesterday, one of my best friends in life passed away, and we got the news late last night. But he was such a community advocate and community force for the city of Atlanta that I decided to dedicate my entire 3 hours of programming on my radio show to his memory, which turned out to be extremely therapeutic because he would have wanted me to do that show, and he would have wanted people to remember what he stood for, not just who he was, but what he represented. And we were able to do that today. So I feel much better, and I feel good being in an environment of truth today as well.
You know, I'm obviously very sorry that you had to go through that, and that sounds like a great person that obviously the family and friends have lost and the community has lost. It's not surprising at all to me that you've surrounded yourself with people who, like you, care about, you know, the area they live in, the country they live in, and want to make it better. Yeah. And I think it's awesome that you decided to highlight their life. I can totally see it being therapeutic and hopefully also inspirational to your listeners. Yes. To know that there are people like that.
Absolutely. Thank you, John.
Well, we're gonna be talking about a lot. People who are not like your friend, some truly terrible political actors. So we're gonna be talking about some of the needless back and forth preceding the apparently inevitable passage today of the Equality Act. So we're gonna have that for you. Little bit of an update on the hundreds of children that remain separated from their families as a legacy of the Trump immigration policy. New details on the allegations of sexual harassment against New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, as well as a bunch of other news that we'll hopefully be able to get to. So if you are already here, thank you for being here, first of all. Second of all, please hit the like button and share the stream if you haven't already, so that people know that we're live. And as we go through, if you want to send us comments or questions on tweets, super chats, you know, on Twitch, anything like that, feel free to do so, and we will respond as we go through this. But with that, Dr. Rashad Ritchie, why don't we jump into the news? We're expecting today that the Equality Act is going to pass, at the very least in the US House. The Senate is a different matter. Perhaps we'll talk about that later on. What you need to know about this Equality Act is that the legislation amends civil rights laws, such as the landmark Civil Rights Act of 1964, which had banned discrimination on the basis of race, color, religion, and national origin, to include protections on the basis of sex, sexual orientation, and gender identity. It also would prohibit such discrimination in public places, on transportation, and in government funded programs. Now, for more details about why the legislation is needed, what effect it would have, we're gonna be doing an interview after the show today, so expect that to be uploaded in the next couple of days. But you might wonder why, in this conversation about the Equality Act, did we have Representative Green as our sort of opening B-roll? That's because yesterday, the day before it's expected to pass, she tried to shut down the operation of the House to stop it from passing, knowing that they don't have the votes. And as a reminder, they don't have the votes because the American people have soundly rejected them in the House, in the Senate, and in the White House. But that, she's not gonna let that stop her from getting what she wants. So they tried to shut things down. And we found out about this thanks to Representative Don Beyer, who said that Marjorie Taylor Greene is trying to adjourn the House and end official business for the day, because she opposes the act, which would prohibit workplace discrimination. She just made a long bigoted speech on the House floor attacking trans people. That's available if you wanna see it. I don't wanna see it, so we're not gonna play it for you, but it is there. Now, what's important about this is that it is not just that Marjorie Greene tried to stop this from passing, it's that her attempt to adjourn the House was supported by every House Republican. So she might have been, at least yesterday, the most vocally transphobic, although apparently Rand Paul today has been saying some pretty transphobic things, so maybe she's not actually the worst. It's that the Republicans united behind her on that effort. Rashad Ritchie, I doubt you're surprised by this, but this really does seem to be their favorite social issue to to fight about, to attack the trans community on. Whether it's their politicians or their media, they have become very obsessed about this.
Yeah, it's quite insane. So let's look at what this is. First of all, Marjorie Taylor Greene is an equal opportunity bigot. That's what she's proving herself to be. So let's look at what the Equality Act does. First of all, it's called the Equality Act. Who in the world in the United States of America should be against something called the Equality Act, which is an extension and amendment of the 1964 civil rights legislation? Here's the thing, the same people, the same folks with the ideology today against the Equality Act would have been the same people against the Civil Rights Act of 1964. So let's be very clear about who these people are. They are against progress. Now, the act itself, John, simply does this. It says you cannot actively discriminate against individuals just because they are lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, just because they have a sexual identity that you may not agree with. You do not have the right to actively discriminate against them in these public spaces, in these government funded programs, and in these workplaces. Why would that be a bad thing? I don't want anybody walking up to me one day saying, hey, you know what, Dr. Richard, we're gonna fire you. You know why we're gonna fire you? Because you're black. Just like you don't want anyone saying, you know why we're gonna fire you? Because you're gay or because you're lesbian. That's a good country to live in, a country that says we're not going to discriminate against you just because of these immutable qualities that you may have. And they're saying, no, obviously that's going to rip the fabric of this country. The moral decline of this country is at stake. And I would submit this, John, for people that say things like this eat away at the moral fabric of the country, I wonder what they think about slavery or slave owners or Jim Crowism. I mean, that seemed pretty immoral to me. The fact that you can rape, molest, and kill people and have the freedom of the government attached to it is quite immoral.
Yeah. Yeah, and I would say for those people who use that term, that every advancement, every legislative defense against discrimination is eating away at the moral fabric. First of all, your fabric sucks, and I don't care about fabric, I care about people. I don't care about a fabric, I care about a community of people.
Yes.
Okay, because people are what makes America. So, and anyway, it's not like they don't get the concept of discrimination. They talk constantly about how white males are the most discriminated against people in the world. They don't get the reality of discrimination, but they get the basic concept at the very least. They think Christians are the most discriminated against people in the country. So we all get that discrimination is a bad thing. Some of us just understand who is actually being discriminated against. So thank you to all the legislators who support the Equality Act. We'll vote hopefully later today to pass it. But there are people, a lot of them, a lot of Republicans that are against this. Now, I want to give you a little bit more of what happened. Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez tweeted at Marjorie Greene, you could just vote no instead of trying to get out of work early. And you should probably stop using those hashtags because women's rights include trans women, because it's not just sick enough that Marjorie Greene wants to be able to continue public and private discrimination against these communities. She also pretended that this is about women's rights, that that's what she's concerned about when she doesn't care at all about that. I mentioned in the intro that it really does seem to be one of the increasing focuses of the right, both their politicians and their media, it is the trans community, because my theory has been that they long for the days when they could openly attack, for instance, gay individuals. I think that they get that that's a little bit harder to do publicly, but they think that they can still do that with the trans community. And so they have jumped in it with legislation. You can't go 5 minutes on Ben Shapiro's show without him talking about the trans community for some reason. But the thing is, we gotta remember a lot of these politicians are still also discriminatory in the old school fashion. Marjorie Taylor Greene would gladly outlaw same-sex marriage as well as any number of other protections for other members of the LGBTQ community. So let's also bear that in mind as we wage these new wars.
Yeah, I agree 100%, and I believe that you're correct on the sentiment that many of these conservative lawmakers who would like to attack our brothers and sisters in the trans community, they are simply secretly hating the entire LGBTQ community, but they cannot express that in this current political atmosphere. And that's why we have to make it a nightmare for them politically to even come after the trans community, because here's how it works. If they come knocking at your neighbor's door and you say nothing, just wait until they knock at your door. So right now they're knocking at your neighbor's door, and we need to sound the alarm that we will not tolerate discrimination in these United States of America. And John, the reason why Marjorie Taylor Greene is doing this is because she's incompetent. She's incompetent and she's incapable of actually being a United States congressperson. And because of that, she tries to make up for it by doing all of these fantastic tactical illusions to simply create the optics that she's engaged and that she's a powerhouse in DC. Nobody respects her. She's not really doing her job. She cannot build coalitions. And the truth of the matter is, her colleagues are simply pistol whipped by Donald Trump. And the fact that Trump remains powerful in the political realm of the Republican narrative is the reason why she has a remnant of power herself.
Yeah, I know we, as a country, politically coming out of 2016, there are these ongoing conversations. What is it that motivates all this? Is it racism and xenophobia, or is it just economic anxiety? It's probably just economic anxiety. These are the left behind people, and that's why they've elected people like Marjorie Greene to demonize trans people. What does that have to do with economic anxiety? Wait, it's starting to seem like it might be the xenophobia. It might be the hate, actually. Right. But anyway, so just bear that in mind. You can learn a little bit about the base by who they choose and why, what the people they choose do. And it doesn't seem like they're trying to raise minimum wage, ensure access to higher education, health insurance, anything like that. If none of the answers are about economics, maybe the question isn't about economics either. But anyway, there's another aspect of this that we do need to launch into, and then we can talk some more. After Representative Greene was unsuccessful in shutting down the House to stop the Equality Act from being passed, there was a bit of a back and forth between Representative Greene and Representative Maureen Newman, who you should know that for the purposes of the story has a transgender daughter. So Maureen Newman tweeted, "Our neighbor, Representative Greene, tried to block the Equality Act because she believes prohibiting discrimination against trans Americans is disgusting, immoral, and evil." So she did this, which you'll see in this video. So there you saw her putting the transgender flag up. And in response to that, Representative Greene said, all of this is just copying what Marie Newman did. But anyway, our neighbor Marie Newman wants to pass the so-called Equality Act to destroy women's rights and religious freedoms. So then she did this. Okay, so you can see that it's a sign that says there are two genders, male and female, trust the science. And you know she trusts the science when she puts that in quotation marks. Even she seems to get that she doesn't mean what she's saying. So anyway, we got more on this. Rashad, what do you think?
All right, first of all, every time these cats talk about religious freedom and that there's an assault on religious freedom, why is it that 100% of these religious freedom conversations, they only give you the freedom to discriminate against somebody else? Yeah. Why isn't it that we have religious expression or religious freedom bills that actually build coalition, that actually unite people, that create a more holistic atmosphere of love? No, that's not what their religious liberty or their religious freedom actually does. Let's go beyond that, because she's making this a Christian versus non-Christian, an evil versus good scenario. So let's talk about that. I'm ready to get into it. Here's the reality. If this was such an important idea of the Christian philosophy, I'm a Christian man myself, give me the percentage of how much Jesus spent his time talking about transgender people. Mm-hmm. Zero. That's how important he thought it was. 0% of his ministry was about transgender people. He talked about how you treat the poor. He talked about taking care of children. He talked about government corruption, like you are, Ms. Greene. He talked about you, but he didn't talk about trans people. And I wonder why. Could it be because Jesus himself did not feel as you feel? that your representation of the Christian right is simply a political movement to the far white extremist reality rather than toward a brown messiah.
Yeah. Yeah, I look, I'm an atheist, although, you know, like left Christians, I love. My grandfather was a progressive Christian, one of my favorite people in the whole world. For non-progressive Christians, though, the idea that like you have a book that was written by the creator of the universe and you don't give a damn what it says, that seems like a big, I wish I had that book. I wish I did. I would read it if it existed.
Right, isn't
but
it?
She doesn't care about that. You think Marjorie Greene's reading the Bible?
Come on. That's the great exposure. The great exposure of the Christian evangelical movement has been this, that the movement was more so a political movement than a religious reformation. Because the question had to be posed, how can you be an expression of Christianity and simply ignore the anti-Christian sentiment of Donald J. Trump and others? Well, the only reason and only way you can do that is by saying internally somewhere, you really don't believe anything that book says.
Yeah, totally. And look, so we're focused on religion here. We should, because Marjorie Greene and others, they might try to co-opt some of the language of rights, talking about women's rights or pretending they care about women's sports. I've always felt like if you care about women's sports, you probably do more good for women's sports by buying tickets rather than talking constantly about transgender women competing in
it. Come on now.
But anyway, no, that's just a smokescreen. She doesn't care about that. If that's what she cares about, why is she tweeting God created only two genders? First of all,
gender is a social construct.
God didn't create any genders. We created genders. God created sexes, but even that isn't as simplistic scientifically as they think it is in terms of chromosomes and everything. But then, and then she's talking about, she's got another tweet about the Equality Act protecting pedophiles. Because of course, in her mind, anyone who doesn't share her same sexual morality is probably a pedophile. Although, for a bit of homework for you, do a little bit of Googling about her personal sexual morality. It's a little bit outside of the Christian norm, just allegations.
Hey, wait a minute. No, listen, let's talk about that because she was getting it in, according to the reports.
Which is totally fine from my point of view, I'm sure from your point of view.
Right. But don't besmirch others for getting it in too. That's what I'm saying. Like she was living a life, she was living her best life at the gym. And obviously, they had a no mask policy.
That's true. I miss the gym. So God created only two genders. We don't yet know exactly how many types of tantric yoga masters God created. But anyway, and then she said that the bill was an attack on God's creation. So we say this just to point out that they might attempt to occasionally co-opt our language by talking about women's rights or saying trust the science, but they don't care about that. This is just old school religious bigotry. That's all it is. It is conservative Christian bigotry, and that's it. And thankfully, at least they don't have the majority in the House anymore. So hopefully this will be able to pass later today.
Yeah, and it should. I don't think they will have any issues with this. I do think they face some challenges in the Senate, but I still think that the Senate will be able to pass it as well. Myself and a few others, we are following this closely. Yeah, I do think it will pass. I've been back and forth with Senator John Ossoff about this and a couple other people that work around the Capitol. But we're thinking that it's going to be slim, but we may be able to get this passed through the Senate as well.
Okay, that sounds pretty good. I'm gonna be watching too. If not, we're thinking here at TDR about developing a tracking list, a whiteboard or something like that, of all the things that we now will have a Democratic majority in the House that'll pass that might die in the Senate because of the filibuster. Because I want to start to accrue a list of things that Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema value the filibuster more than. So, you know, there's a lot of things on that list already, but perhaps the Equality Act can go on that list. We'll see. Maybe enough Republicans will switch over that they'll save Kristen Sinema and Joe Manchin that. But anyway, we will be watching.
Yeah, we'll see. They got to do some horse trading. And that's one of the unfortunate realities of politics still in America, is that a lot of deals are made without the transparency of the American public. And in order to get a legislation like this passed, Democrats will have to do some horse trading. We don't know exactly what horses they are trading. But if it gets passed, believe me, there has been a compromise somewhere. And I guarantee you, we would not like the compromise because we're more idealistic in our political view. So we'll see what happens.
We'll see. We'll see. Yeah, in this particular area, I don't like any of the potential horses that might be traded, but we'll see. We'll see. Maybe we sort of glossed over this. Maybe we didn't make this explicit enough. Maybe it was obvious. I don't know. But so they both, Marie Newman and Marjorie Greene, both put things up in the hallway. One put up a flag showing solidarity for the transgender community. The other put up a sign saying that it's not a thing. These people do not exist. You are either a man or a woman, and I will say what you are. Across the hallway of the office of a woman with a transgender daughter. Like, think about, we can disagree about the policy or whatever, but Marjorie Greene isn't just a Christian in her mind. She's a good Christian, and that makes you a good person. Is this what a good person does?
Yeah.
Tries to harass a coworker about the identity of their child. What a
just think
sick
about this.
Thing.
John, think about it, right? If this person worked at, I don't know, Office Depot, right? Mm-hmm. She would be one, fired, noted as a horrible person, not just a horrible worker, but a horrible individual. She could possibly be charged with or at least accused of workplace harassment, workplace intimidation. But the way our country is set up, she can be a United States Congressperson. Do all of those things that will get her fired from Office Depot and still be celebrated by a large section of these yet to be United States of America. But that showed you where our political narrative and political reality rests. She is still considered mainstream in the Republican Party.
Yeah. Yeah. What is she going to raise? $50,000 off of this? $100,000 off of this?
Yep.
But as you say, yeah, you would get fired from Office Depot. I think you'd probably be okay at Home Depot based on their owner, but Office Depot, you're screwed. Don't try to do
that. Yeah, you'll be okay. Yeah, you'll definitely be okay at Home Depot.
Everyone, go to Lowe's. Although, I don't know, their owner's probably terrible too. I don't know, they have a good YouTube channel. I'm getting really into DIY stuff. I don't know about Home Depot's YouTube game is not as strong as Lowe's. That's all I'm saying. Watch The Weekender. Anyway, okay, with that, let's jump back into the news for kind of a good update, kind of. It's American politics, so how optimistic do you want your news, people? Honestly, move to New Zealand if you want good news. Anyway, let's jump into this. Lawyers that have been working pro bono to try to reunite children who'd been separated from their families during the Trump administration have apparently succeeded in reuniting 105 children in the past month, which is an amazing thing. That is 105 miracles right there. It does, however, mean that there are still 506 children who have been identified as having been separated but have not yet been reunited. So it is a drop of, I'm not good at math, 18%, 20%, something like that.
Yeah.
Which is, that is certainly, Dr. Rashad Ritchie, that is good for 105 different families. That is an amazing update there.
All right, great update for those families, okay? We are thankful for those families. But here's where the Biden administration should step up and step up strong. I had the pleasure of interviewing Doug, who's Vice President Kamala Harris's husband. He's the second gentleman of the United States. And I asked him, I said, listen, what are you going to do as the second gentleman? Every time you guys, you know, you pick something that you want to do. He said he wanted to lead an army of pro bono lawyers to right wrongs in the United States of America. That's great. Man, I love that expression. I love the spirit behind it. He is a world-class attorney, made millions of dollars being a lawyer. Good stuff, right? But this is where the disconnect exists, in my opinion, between the Biden administration and doing something that is holistically good. There are things that the administration can do right now to make it easier to reunite these families. And we have to hold them accountable to this. Here's what we're doing. This is the other way to look at it, John. You got, what, 400 or 500 kids still not united with their families. You know what you're doing with those kids? You're creating future enemies of this state. They will never have a good or decent feeling about the United States of America if you get this wrong. We don't need to create future enemies. We don't need to create individuals based on our own policies who will grow up detesting the United States of America when we have the ability to correct, to right the wrong by the stroke of a pen. The Biden administration needs to get involved and get involved big.
Yeah. Yeah, and they are getting involved. I'm not sure that it's necessarily, it would qualify for you for it being big, but they're getting involved a little bit. So we'll see. Let me quickly mention though that there's two bits of bad news here. So one is that over 500 kids are still separated, and those are of the kids that have been identified. Remember, the record keeping was purposefully sloppy. God only knows how many kids were actually separated. The other is that those 105 kids that have been reunited are not now fine. Like it's all good. It didn't happen. Those are 105 kids that are going to be affected to differing levels for the rest of their life.
Yeah.
This is one of the, there's a lot of damage that can be repaired that was done during the Trump administration, but there's some that can be sort of corrected, but never actually erased. There's certain stuff that you can't put back in the bottle once you've taken it out. And the trauma that many of these kids and their families will experience, that's permanent. So let's bear that in mind. We can appreciate the good news that they've been reunited, but they were still separated 4 months, 4 years possibly, and many still are.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. And that's the sad reality of policies like this. And yeah, you know, a lot of the blame obviously belongs to Donald J. Trump himself. But at some point in the very near future, this will be the administration's fault, or at least a standard for them to correct it. And so, you know, it's moving the way it should move, in my opinion. I would like to see it move faster.
Yeah, so they've set up this task force to put it under the control of the federal government. Which means it wasn't before.
Which is insane.
Whose fault was it? It was the Trump administration that did it. But anyway, good. Another good thing of getting Biden in. But one of the issues is many of the families, and particularly the parents of the kids who remain to be reunited, are not in the US. And assuming we can track them down, and for many we will not be able to, because again, the Trump administration didn't care to actually track this information. They're abroad right now. So the deputy director of the ACLU's Immigrants' Rights Project is saying now that the Biden task force should commit to bringing the deported parents back to the US under special protections to reunite with their children, which, look, I think is an objective good. But if you're not yet convinced, bear in mind a large number of those parents were deported as the result of an agreement made with the Trump administration, where the Trump administration said, we're going to deport all of you, but if you will willingly go, we'll let your kids stay. So that is an insane thing to say, an insane decision to put onto these parents, onto these families. And a lot of good could be done to repair that if the Biden administration were to create some sort of special protection for these parents to be brought back into the United States to bring the families together. I know that Republican heads are exploding all over the country, but I think that seems reasonable.
Yeah, it seems very reasonable. We're talking about a few hundred families, right? And at some point, America really does have to be the example they proclaim they are, not only to other Americans, but to the rest of the world. If we really want to be that shining city on the hill, these are things that will take you there. And you know, let's not get caught up in this whole immigration thing. First of all, Reagan is the guy who said everybody should stay here. He's the one, a Republican is the one who initially signed an amnesty executive order, amnesty bill. He did that. Beyond the immigration discussion with these children, just remember, every time we talk about undocumented workers in the United States of America and we criminalize them, well, there's a federal statute that does say, hey, if you work in the United States and you don't have documentation, it is illegal. But the subsection to that same federal statute says, if you hire them, it's illegal as well. Is part of the same statutory legal language in the federal law. How many times have we seen hundreds of workers being arrested at a warehouse, undocumented individuals, but we didn't see the CEO being arrested. We didn't see the CFO being arrested. We didn't see the hiring manager being arrested. We only saw the poor brown people being arrested. And the same federal statute that says what they did is illegal is the same federal statute that says hiring them is illegal. So I don't get caught up in the hypocrisy of the immigration argument.
Yeah. Yeah, that's always been an amazing thing where both sides of that are technically illegal. Technically,
yeah.
And that's about it. Okay, let's move on to our next topic, very much switching it up.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
It has not been a great month for Governor Cuomo, but bear in mind, he did it to himself. Now we're talking, obviously, there's the scandal involving the nursing home death cover-up, but then also there are new details that have now been revealed by Lindsay Boylan, a former aide to Governor Cuomo, about the sexual harassment allegations that she initially described in December of last year. We now have more information about that. She published a lengthy essay on Wednesday morning accusing the governor of sexual harassment and outlining several unsettling episodes, including an unsolicited kiss in his Manhattan office. She said that during her more than 3 years working as an economic advisor in the administration, Cuomo, quote, would go out of his way to touch me on my lower back, arms, and legs, compared her to one of his rumored ex-girlfriends, and once joked they should play strip poker. I don't get the joke, but anyway, she's currently running for Manhattan Borough President and first publicly accused the governor of sexual harassment back in December in a series of remarks on Twitter. At the time, she didn't speak to the media, offer details of the alleged harassment, or provide corroboration. On Wednesday, she offered new details, including describing an incident in 2018 when she said that she and Mr. Cuomo were alone in his Manhattan office. She says, quote, "As I got up to leave and walked toward an open door, he stepped in front of me and kissed me on the lips. I was in shock, but I kept walking." And she says that even in her early days working for the Trump, for the Cuomo administration, oh, I almost called him Trump.
Uh-oh. That's
weird. Weird Freudian slip there. Working for the Cuomo administration, her boss at Empire State Development had once told her that the governor had a crush on me. His senior staff began keeping tabs on my whereabouts, she wrote, publishing an email from 2016 in which a top aide, Mr. Cuomo, asked her boss if she was going to be attending an event. We have more, but wow. I mean, yeah, this is sort of in practice what it looks like when, you know, powerful men in politics feel like they can apparently do whatever they want. She was under no obligation to make all of this public, but I am glad that she did. It is. Yeah, it's disturbing. And that Freudian slip that I had about Trump is because, yeah, it's kind of acting exactly like how he described he was allowed to act around women.
Yeah. Yeah, Cuomo effing up. Cuomo need to get his life together. And you can't change, and I believe this fundamentally, you can't change what you fail to acknowledge. Everybody's made a mistake. Everybody's fallen short. Everybody's done something they're not proud of. But if you routinely deny, duck, dodge, deny, deflect what you have been for this long, because I guarantee you, she's not the only one, okay? But if you have operated in this way and you fail to acknowledge your own shortcomings and disastrous behavior, then I am only left to assume that you are still engaged in it. That's my only assumption I could take away from that. I read her story, I read it earlier today on my show. I went back to the December allegation, which was a snippet, basically. Beyond her words, she herself is a credible individual. Just by herself, she's credible. And I'm not sure if other things will come out of this. It doesn't seem as if she's trying to push it beyond just telling people what her story is at the moment. But you know, a lot of Democrats are trying to defend Cuomo. And if you get caught up in that, where you're only defending because he happens to be a Democrat and you happen to be a Democrat, you are now just as tribal as the other side.
Yeah.
You can't call right and wrong based on a partisan lens only. You just can't do that if you want to stand separate and apart from the opposition party.
Yeah. Yeah. Or if you do it, it's not really right and wrong to you. It's a preference, I guess. I prefer some things over others. I don't have an actual moral objection to it. And yeah. Again, we should point out, which I believe we already have, these are allegations.
Right.
It's not proven, I guess.
Yeah, but I think he did it. That's just on me. I know these are allegations, but this is just my personal opinion. I think he did all of that. That's just me talking.
Yeah, I mean, to the extent that one can comport themselves and speak in a way that will influence one way or another future acceptance that people have of your sorts of behavior. Yeah, this seems sort of like a Cuomo thing that he would.
Seems like a Cuomo thing to me.
So, now look, everybody gets to weigh for themselves. Is this the thing he should resign for? I don't know. Is this better or worse than covering up thousands of deaths in nursing homes? I don't know. They're very different. But anyway, yeah. He has been having a disastrous period. And you know, he's probably thinking now about how this influences his inevitable run for the presidency. He should be thinking about how this possibly influences legal proceedings going forward, how it influences his continued governorship in New York, because there are a lot of other people in New York who could hypothetically fill that spot, who might be a little bit less abhorrent when it comes to the pandemic and in their personal behavior.
Yeah, now how does it affect his brother and reporting on this? That's the other part that I'm thinking about.
Interesting.
Right? Cause it's big news. It's the news yeah. right now. And he's been the news for weeks now. Yeah.
Has did Chris Cuomo talk about the nursing home thing? I don't generally watch.
Yeah, I don't watch Chris CNN Cuomo or MSNBC, anymore myself. But
yeah, I mean, look, and I will say he's one of the only people in any of those networks that has brought me or other members of the Young Turks on. That mm-hmm. said, he has a major news show. He has to talk about this stuff. He has a major news show that does tend to do New York-y type stuff. So they kind of have to talk about this, although obviously he has a conflict of interest.
Yeah.
Although he's never really seemed to like his brothers all that much. So I don't know, maybe that'll influence it. I have the same relationship
some strange
with my brothers.
Interviews over the years. I've
they
seen
do,
them kind
they
of
do.
Like that was weird, but you know.
Yeah. Yeah. If I ever interview my brothers on the show, it's gonna be weird too.
Yeah.
Anyway. So, but obviously serious allegations. I want to give you just a little bit more quick details on that. In October 2017, she wrote, the governor joked that they should play strip poker while on a flight back from an event in Western New York. The two were in close quarters, sitting across from one another on the plane with a press aide and a state trooper sitting nearby. It's insane. Someone meant to coordinate with the press and a law officer right there, but he's doing it now. His office has disputed her account, releasing a statement from four current and former administration officials who are aboard one or more of the four flights in October 2017, including three from Western New York, where Mrs. Boylan had accompanied the governor. And I get it. There's always gonna be things like this. Maybe there were people in that flight that didn't hear it, even if it did happen. But having people who didn't hear a conversation does not disprove that the conversation existed.
So. Right, or maybe they're just lying, John.
Yeah, or maybe they're just lying.
Maybe they're just saying, yeah, we got your back.
Wait, a politician
lying? Pay us? Yeah, of course we got your back.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, we're in the media, so we have to tell you that he's disputing the account. We don't necessarily have to say that it seems even. That's a result of that. But I'm sure she will do further interviews. We'll get more details, although again, she's under no obligation to do that. But we will see if more develops as a result of this. We've got a disturbing instance of a death thanks to the police once again. This one disturbingly similar to the events that led to George Floyd's death at the hands of police last year. This is a 30-year-old Northern California man who had been undergoing a mental health episode. His name is Angelo Quinto. He had been suffering apparently from anxiety, depression, and paranoia for a few months when his sister called police to their home on December 23rd of last year because she feared he would hurt their mother thanks to the mental episode that he was having. Before police arrived, Quinto's mother had been holding him to her chest with her hands clasped around his back for a few minutes, and quote, he had already started to calm down, their lawyer said. When two officers from the Antioch Police Department arrived, Burris said, this is their lawyer, they had made no attempt to understand the situation and instead immediately grabbed Quinto from his mother's arms. He lost consciousness and was taken to a local hospital after this incident. And he was pronounced dead 3 days later. So we're gonna give you more details on this, including the connections to George Floyd. First, here is a statement from the mother.
Put him down and he said, please don't kill me, please don't kill me.
It was 2 days before Christmas and Angelo Quinto was acting unusual. The former Navy sailor had been having recent episodes of paranoia and was holding on to his mother Cassandra and his sister, telling them not to leave him.
He was hugging me like this and I'm short, so you know, it's here.
His sister Isabella called 911 while Angelo's mother put him in a bear hug on the floor of their home in Antioch. When police arrived, they said Angelo had calmed down, but officers restrained him anyway.
One officer was holding his legs and the other officer had his leg, knee.
Knee or lower leg.
Lower leg.
When paramedics got there, Angelo wasn't moving and blood was coming out of his mouth. Cassandra took this video on her cell phone when she realized something was wrong.
I was there, I was watching them, trusted them. I thought, you know, they know what they're doing.
And that is sad, especially to have that faith and that trust, knowing that this sort of incident, how many times have we seen this play out? I mean, look, we don't always see it play out so similarly to George Floyd, where a cop apparently decided that kneeling on someone's neck for multiple minutes was a good thing to do. But when someone is having some sort of mental health episode, and you call the cops, this is not the first time that this has happened where the person ends up dying. In this case, they weren't shot, although that happens too. It is just so dangerous in certain situations to call the cops to come help you.
Yeah, and this is why you must defund the police. The defund the police movement is so necessary and so needed to help law enforcement understand their true role. The reason why defund the police is required now is because it reprioritizes the budget. It reprioritizes the training. You have a family calling 911 and that family is expecting help. That family is expecting rescue. That family is expecting resolution, not expecting their loved one to be killed by the very people they pay to protect and serve them. So now what's happening? These instances are not new. They are being more publicized, some are being recorded, but they are not new. Unfortunately, the way we have allowed uniformed police officers to basically create their own avenue and their own rules about how they engage with the community has hurt not only us, but has hurt their industry. And it's going to take a real refocusing of what we believe law enforcement should be in the United States to make it change. Right now you have an us and them mentality as it relates to black and brown people and the police especially. And if you are black or brown and you call 911, I know this because I'm a black man. If I have to call 911, which will be the last resort, but if I have to, that means I have prepared in my mind for something insane and unthinkable to happen. And I never should have to make that kind of decision by calling an agency of the government who works for me. I pay their salary as a taxpayer. You pay their salary as a taxpayer. You should never be afraid of them. And if your city is bragging about hiring more cops, they're already failing you. Because if you're hiring more police officers, that means that you're simply reacting to more crime. You're not addressing crime. You're not spending money on what causes the crime. You're not taking that overinflated budget and taking care of your homeless, those that are addicted to drugs and alcohol, those that are in poverty. Because if you actually address the underlying issues of criminality in the first place, your city will brag about needing less cops. That should be the conversation.
Exactly. Yeah, and you should never feel any of that when you call these people that are supposed to be experienced, they're supposed to be trained to handle these situations. And you might look at this sort of outcome and think, well, I guess they weren't trained, but they were. They use the training they got, and the training they got is to brutalize people, to assume that everyone is a constant lethal threat to them, regardless of the absence of weapons or anything like that. And so they do this. And who thinks the cops should be responding to these? The cops don't actually think they should be responding to these sorts of situations or want to, but they want the money.
Yep.
There should be people who are trained specifically to deal with these things. That is the whole point of defunding the police. It is not to get rid of emergency services. It is to set them up in a way that they will actually serve the communities. Ideally in a way that doesn't result in more needless deaths.
That's
so we could have that, or we could just shovel more money over to the cops so they can get fancy sniper rifles and vehicles intended to survive mine blasts and all of that. We've made the decision across America. The question is, are we gonna make a different decision going forward?
That's very well said and well put. There's a city councilman in Atlanta named Antonio Brown. Check him out when you get a moment. Antonio Brown presented legislation a few weeks ago that would actually create another division of the police department. And this division would only handle calls like you just heard. They will be specially trained to handle those types of community calls. They are not trained to kill anybody, but they will be trained to handle that. Now, that means that a certain portion of the budget would have to come out and get reallocated to this new division. So what did the state of Georgia do? The state of Georgia has presented legislation to make it illegal to decrease a city or county's police budget by 5% or more. That's their response to this. They don't even have to get involved. They could just be silent, let local government handle local government. But instead of doing that, the small government people, they are presenting legislation to limit a local government's ability to even defund the police at a level of 5%.
Which is, I mean, we know what it actually represents, but at the bare minimum it represents, we cannot conceive of, and we're not working towards a society that will ever need less police, that will ever be truly safer. And fiscal conservatives, fiscal conservatives. Imagine like trying to set some sort of max on how much they can increase the national military budget each year. Their heads would explode.
Exactly.
Like some sort of new experimental and expensive military bomb. Okay, we're gonna move on to this next topic. Apologies in advance for the fact that we're gonna be bringing this woman up once again. But it's important, especially as these hearings are going on. I want to address the continued conspiracy theory that the Capitol attack on January 6th was conducted by anyone other than the people who had been sent there by the president, had been planning for weeks to go there at the behest of the president. Everybody still seems to think on the right that it was Antifa and all of that. And I want to talk about one very particular, very obvious demonstration of how untrue that is. So in tweets after the Capitol insurrection, Representative Marjorie Greene falsely suggested that those who had broken into the Capitol were not Republicans, and instead falsely implied so-called Antifa dressed as Trump supporters were to blame. Senator Ron Johnson has been doing this just this last week, actually. Right-wing media like Tucker Carlson is a little bit less interested in saying who they think it was, but they're definitely saying who it wasn't. It wasn't white supremacists or anything like that, despite the fact that it very obviously was. But here's the thing with some of the people making these claims, they know damn well that it was Republicans because they know the particular Republicans who were there. And Marjorie Greene is one of the people I'm talking about here, because one of the people who attacked the Capitol is Anthony Aguero, a conservative live streamer, activist, and associate of Marjorie Greene, who said on video following the January 6th assault on the Capitol that he had been among those who entered and attacked those who falsely claimed it was done by Antifa. So we're gonna have his quote in a second, but I was saying this like the week after the attack, that half the right is saying, no, it was a false flag, it was Antifa. And the other half, those who were actually there, were like, stop trying to take our credit. I'm a Republican and I attacked the Capitol. And they're just talking past each other. But anyway, he said, we were all there. It was not Antifa and it was not BLM. It was Trump supporters that did that yesterday. I'm the first to admit it, being one myself. I walked amongst all those people, he said. Now, he and Marjorie Greene have worked together closely over the years on causes such as immigration and the border wall, and have attended pro-Trump rallies together. In many since deleted videos, Green repeatedly called him amazing and a friend. On social media, Aguero has called Green one of my closest friends. So apparently these two close friends were pretty close to each other on January 6th. We don't yet know that there was any coordination or any tours in advance, but one of her best amazing buddies was there busting into the Capitol and hunting down Democratic lawmakers. So that's a fun little development, Rashad.
Yep, good to see the Ku Klux Klowns doing things and taking off their hoods. They are saying, we are them. We are the ones. Blame us. Okay, great. You all are domestic terrorists. That's who you are. And the reason why they are domestic terrorists is because what they did was intimidation, violence, and criminality to impact politics in the United States of America. That is your working definition of terrorism. Let's be very clear, and I've said this before, if their last names would have been Muhammad, or their skin would have been black and brown, they would absolutely been called terrorists. But we tend to shy away from that terminology as it relates to them. And outside of that, what were they trying to accomplish? They were trying to accomplish a treasonous act against the United States government. You can't lose that in the conversation. When you look at those articles of impeachment for Donald J. Trump, it says, yeah, leading an insurrection against the Capitol. You know what that really means? That means treason. Now, they didn't use that terminology, and I know why, because it would have been a political firecracker. But
yeah,
you have a president of the United States that led a treasonous mob of terrorists against the United States of America.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. And that's why we're talking about this a lot recently. We want to make sure that people know what's actually going on, what it actually was, as so many people in right-wing media are attempting to rewrite that. And right-wing politicians like Green are still lying about what it was, even though their buddies were there doing it.
Their besties.
Squad goals or squad ungoals. Not interested in that squad. What I also want to talk about, though, is that we're facing a group of people, millions strong, that are prone to believing every conspiracy theory they hear. They are hateful and xenophobic and selfish and all of that. But the one thing we have going for us is that almost universally, they're also very, very, very stupid. So in the pre-show today, I was talking about how one guy who's now been arrested, who was at the Capitol, while he was attacking the Capitol, was texting his ex photos of him there and videos saying, how stupid are you that you don't know this election was fraudulent, you stupid moron. And so she sent that to the FBI and
he's
been arrested. So what do you, dude, you moron, it's your ex, you stupid idiot.
Whoever she is, I love this woman already, never met her before in my life. But she said, I got your moron for you.
Exactly. And now this guy, remember, he filmed himself and live streamed during the event. And then, oops, you're breaking the law, doofus. So now he's got to come up with some sort of explanation for it. And so the explanation sort of changes depending on when you ask. But he was asked, he reached for comment by CNN. He told CNN that the videos uploaded compiled are not mine. They're screen recorded from other posts that I saw. He didn't respond to further questions asking to specify which videos are screen recorded. And understand, screen recorded or no, he's in the videos in the Capitol. I don't care if you screen capped it, dude. It's you.
You gotta love it. You gotta love redneck logic. That's all this is. This is redneck logic. Because I promise you, to him and some group of rednecks in the world, this makes complete sense to them.
Totally. Yeah. So that argument doesn't really hold up. So he's got another one. And he eventually confirmed to CNN he was at the Capitol. But he said, I was there as an independent journalist reporting the events. I wasn't like down with that group. I was just filming it. Screw them. I'm just letting you know what they did. Which is interesting because he said in the video, a message was sent. These politicians are not going to continue to get away with the abuses they've been doing. We will continue to press on these individuals. Wait, what do you mean we? I thought you were just a journalist who was reporting independently on the events, not a we who's pressing on the politicians, you stupid idiot. Like, these people have a lot of political power still. The fact that they're stupid doesn't mean that they're not a terrible opponent to have, but they're also very, very stupid.
They are, and they're cowards. I mean, look at what it took for him to abandon everything he's supposed to believe in, all of his patriotism, all of his vigor. What did it take? It took an email from CNN. Like, that's all, like, whatever you believed in evaporated once somebody asked you a question.
Yeah.
That's not the guy you want at the dance with you. You don't want him at the bar with you. You don't want him at a bar fight with you. That's not the guy.
Exactly. You get in that bar fight, you'd all get arrested. He'd be like, I was just covering the bar fight.
No,
I
wasn't involved in it. He would tell on you.
Rashad did it. Anyway, bear in mind, it's not like the FBI needs my advice or whatever. But I would personally say, as you're investigating this thing, and apparently according to the reporting of Ken Klippenstein at The Intercept, they have seized phone records, including phone records of some members of Congress. I'm just saying, the fact that she was there and her good buddy who's awesome was there, maybe look into their phone records and see if maybe they had talked before the event, and maybe Representative Green had some idea of what this awesome bestie of hers was planning to do. Not saying anything, just saying.
Congressman Hank Johnson, I've known him and his family for many years. When all this went down at the Capitol, he was the person I called, not to do a story. I just wanted to make sure he was safe, right? He came on my show the next day, and he was the first sitting congressperson who said, this was an inside job. He said, it was no way. All of these barriers broke down, and these people knew exactly where to go. They were leading different mobs throughout different places in the Capitol. He said, this is an inside job on some level. And I really hope the Department of Justice is going to research and investigate based on that notion, that there are likely operators within our federal government who coordinated, cross-coordinated with members of this terrorist group.
Yeah, I agree. That brings us to the end of our time together, Rashad, though, but always appreciate you being here. You know, especially when you've already done so much work and you're dealing with, you know, the personal tragedy over the last day. Very much appreciate you making time. There's gonna be a lot of people in the audience who are gonna be desperate to see more of your work. Where can they do that?
They can go to RashadRitchie.com, RashadRitchie.com, or you can just follow me on social media. Follow me on Twitter at Rashad, R-A-S-H-A-D underscore Richie. That's R-I-C-H-E-Y, at Rashad underscore Richie. Also, you can find me on the gram the same way.
Awesome. Well, thank you as always.
Thank you.
As we're filming this on Thursday, supposedly the House is on the precipice of finally passing the Equality Act. But what is it? What will it accomplish? Why are so many Republicans fighting so hardcore against it? We're joined by a guest who's gonna help explain all of that and more to us. The Executive Director of the National Black Justice Coalition, David Johns, joins us now. David, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Glad to have you here. So for people who might not have been following this act, what is it about? How did it get started, and what is it intended to accomplish?
Yeah, I appreciate that. Three responses to those questions. The Equality Act aims to provide clear and consistent protections to prevent people from being discriminated against, experiencing hate crimes or other forms of harassment as a result of sex. So the technical language is on the basis of sex. So acknowledging the discrimination that women face. Also with regard to sexual identity, gender orientation, or expression. So lots of support for members of the LGBTQIA plus community. The origins of the bill harken back to the Civil Rights Acts of the 60s, 64 in particular, as well as the Americans with Disabilities Act. And then more recently, last year, the Supreme Court in the Bostick decision essentially affirmed that employers should not be discriminating against people based on actual or perceived sexual identity, gender orientation, or expression. And so in total, this bill is important because it is the sad reality now in too many states throughout the country that people don't have access to things that we might otherwise take for granted, public accommodations, things like being able to ride in an Uber, walk into a department store and buy clothes for a job interview, access public housing, which is often required to complete a job application or otherwise see a doctor, or access other federal services. And so this is really about providing a level playing field for everyone to have access to the American dream.
Okay, everything that you've seen there seems very common sense, very reasonable. And yet yesterday, as of when we're filming this, there was an attempt to shut down the House of Representatives to stop this from being passed. I'm not an expert. It seems to me like just old school bigotry. Is there anything more to it than that?
No, I mean, right, most of the answer to most of the questions around like what's wrong in America, the answer is often white supremacy and or bigotry. And to be clear, white supremacy isn't always folks in hoods and tiki torches. It shows up in attempting to prevent everyone from having access to the same otherwise fundamental rights that those people are trying to stop other people from having access to. And so it is logical for people that understand that diversity has always made our country great, that we all benefit when people have the opportunity to be safe and fully participate in economic, civic, and social life, and that we provide, again, clear and consistent protections. It is sadly the reality that one's ability to be protected or access an Uber or be kicked out of an Uber because of one's feelings varies according to the state that you're in or that you're moving through. And so this is really about filling gaps so that we can all stand on equal footing.
So as you described in your opening remarks, this is going to provide a couple different forms of protection. It's going to protect a lot of different types of people. But you know, in particular, for communities of color, what impact is this going to have?
Yeah, so it is important for me to remind people that not all LGBTQ people are white and not all Black people are cis and heterosexual. As long as there have been Black people, we've been incredibly diverse. And many Black LGBTQIA+ people live in the South. We are disproportionately concentrated with other Black folks, and we live in states where it is legal to deny us access to housing, employment, the things that I've talked about and we referenced over the course of this conversation. And so too often, especially in moments like February, which provides for federal recognition of Black History Month, we celebrate the work of Dr. King and the legacy of those who marched in the streets for us to have access to civil rights. That work is done. And what we know is that there's a lot of work yet to be done, and passing the Equality Act is a critical step in that direction. And at the risk of being persnickety, it's not just about benefiting Black people, which to be clear, I care and love a lot. So I want to make sure that that happens. But poor white people who are often discriminated against too in really pernicious ways would benefit from the passage of the Equality Act. It accounts for the kind of attacks that people experience based on class and sometimes region as well. And so I want to be clear that this is about providing equal access to all Americans who deserve it.
Okay. You talked about more work that needs to be done. In the very short term, work needs to be done outside of the House. I mean, for this to pass, the Senate would have to pass it as well. Currently, what are your hopes or expectations for that process? Is it going to happen?
We shall see, right? What we know is that a passage in the Senate requires members of the Republican caucus to support the passage of the bill. Heretofore, they have not, and some of them have hidden behind religious exemptions or the attempt to hide bigotry and ignorance and other forms of discrimination behind a thin veil of religion. And to be clear, as the grandson of a Baptist preacher from Texas, I fundamentally believe that everyone should have the right to practice and worship in the way that they choose. And so doing should not infringe upon my ability to enjoy the rights that you otherwise take for granted as well. And so to be clear, there is a lot of work to be done in the Senate. The Senate is historically where the bill has stalled after being passed out of the House of Representatives and every Congress that has been introduced through recently. And my hope is that this moment in this larger movement might provide the support that we need in order for it to get to President Biden's desk.
So let's say hypothetically that it doesn't, that no Republicans sign on. And considering, you know, that every congressional Republican signed on to Congresswoman Green's attempt to shut down debate yesterday, I don't think it's impossible to assume that maybe there won't. If that is the case, if they're not able to get enough Republicans to cross over, there's this conversation that's been going on over the past month or so about the future of the filibuster. And some critics of the continued existence of the filibuster say that we can talk about traditions and debate and bipartisanship and blah, blah, blah. But historically, the filibuster, at least up until the last few years, the big instances of it being used were to stop civil rights legislation. We might experience the filibuster stopping more civil rights legislation. If no Republicans cross over and the filibuster stops the Equality Act from being passed, is this evidence that the filibuster needs to go and more pressure perhaps on the couple of Democrats that are opposed to getting rid of it?
It could be, and I think beyond that, it's an invitation for us to talk about what civics looks like at this current moment in the history of our country and what it means for there to be elected representatives who do not seem to respond to where it is that their constituents are. It should be lost on no one that more than 70% of Americans support legislation like the Equality Act, and it's likely a larger number at this moment in time. And if in fact, again, the United States senators representing those people are not operating in ways that are consistent with their wishes, then we need to have other conversations about ways to hold elected officials accountable.
Okay, so that was one hypothetical. Let's go in the opposite direction. Hypothetically, it passes, Joe Biden signs it, we celebrate. What's the next step look like? What would you want to be a follow-up to the passage of the Equality Act happening?
Yeah, I think that there are at least three things that I would hope for. One is that there is also concerted support in implementing the Equality Act. It should be lost on no one that signing the bill into law will not immediately change the realities of people who are needed and who are otherwise hiding behind it the very next day. And so we will continue to work to ensure that it's implemented in a way that allows people to show up and access public accommodations and other essential needs, right? So that's one. The second thing is that we continue to try and challenge and change the way that people think about minoritized and stigmatized communities, really shifting why we need this federal protection to prevent people from acting in ways that otherwise might come close to being a hate crime or a federal offense. And then the last thing is to acknowledge that, again, especially in the states where Black LGBTQ people are concentrated in the South, there are still other legal impediments that prevent us from having the kinds of conversations that we're having now, or the kind of work that would allow people to play evenly on a level playing field. I think in this moment, as an elementary school teacher, about states that have no promo homo law, about things connected to LGBTQIA people, histories, or ways of making meaning. And so there's still a lot of work to be done at the state level in many states in order to ensure that people can show up and be happy, healthy, and whole.
Okay. Well, so no matter what happens today, the work isn't done, but hopefully at least that step will be passed. And David Johns, we appreciate you joining us and breaking it all down.
Thank you for the invitation.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.